Welcome to the Chief of Anything podcast in this four-tone vierklang format with Catherine Wutz and Dominic Klimek. Our vierklang format talks about the interplay of purpose, vision, values and strategies and about what happens to companies when we bring these four together. Here I hear firsthand how the vierklang strategy has transformed companies and what I can expect from its implementation.
Hello, Dominic.
Hello, Catherine. How are you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for asking. And I'm very, very excited about our guest today. We are speaking to Sven Gebhardt, the owner and CEO of GC Heat. And Sven, I know you've been knowing about the Vierklang model of purpose, vision, values, and strategies for quite some time. What is your first experience with this model?
Well, hi guys. Thanks for having me here today. Well, my first contact with the Vierklang model actually was in 2005. Back then, I was an employee, a manager at Vodafone Germany, and I was part of a talent program. That's where I also met Michael Portz, the founder of Coa Academy. And part of that program was to gain international exposure and experience, and I was lucky enough to end up in Australia. And by the time I arrived in Australia, the CEO of Vodafone Australia was Graham Mayer, the one that Michael calls the godfather of Vierklang. And that's where I first came into touch with the Vierklang model. So coming from a very number-driven or number-focused business in Vodafone Germany, it was quite a rough landing for me arriving in Australia for multiple reasons. One thing was that Vodafone Australia was the challenger in the market. So usually Vodafone is the big incumbent and the biggest player in the market. And Vodafone Australia was the opposite. So it was a small challenger brand. And then the culture was very, very different from what I was used to. So I was used to a very, as I said, a very number-driven approach. And what Graham was introduced for in Vodafone Australia was to turn the also formerly very corporate culture into a very people-focused one. And he had done that in ways that are a lot more extreme than what I knew before. So in Vodafone Australia, they had the so-called BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal that you're probably familiar with. So they wanted to really disrupt the market with multiple things. For example, they gave away free phones or subsidized phones, even if you did not subscribe to a contract. And the purpose was that the brand should be so loved by the customers that they would stick with the brand anyways, also without a lock-in contract. So that was quite shocking for me coming from Germany. Then everybody in Vodafone Australia had their own company credit card. Everybody had access to see all the spendings of all the other employees. So that was a measure to show people how much they were trusted and how much management trusted in the people. Then Graham was a very low-key guy, so no fancy company cars, or when he met with the CEO of a rival mobile phone provider, he didn't go in a fancy restaurant, he went into the street cafe opposite of Vodafone, and I'm not sure if the other CEO appreciated it, but for sure the people in Vodafone thought it was a fantastic move to show that they were different. And what I really liked about Graham's way was that he engaged people at all levels. So it wasn't kind of only top management makes a decision and then everybody has to follow it. But they had a nice way of kind of obviously giving the big direction, but then engaging manager level and but top down to the employee level to get everyone on board and commit to the strategy.
Like engaging all employees sounds amazing. And as an owner, as a CEO, this is what I want, because then everybody is like pulling their own weights and bringing the company forward. What was the success formula behind Graham's idea? Like, how did he steer Vodafone Australia?
Well, he was very firm or very committed to the Vierklang model. That's once you define where you want to go, and then define what are the measures and what are the steps to get there, and then kind of get everybody behind those single steps. So as I said, we were the challenger in the market, so there was a lot of action to be taken. So we had to convince the market we're different. We had to be more present because we had to gain market share. We were the only ones who had their call center still in Australia. All the other ones had them outsourced to India. And so there were many, many little steps that were part of the bigger picture. And I felt over there that people were, at least the people that were still around, were very much behind that model. I think those people that were into a very corporate approach, very hierarchical approach, they were already gone by the time I arrived. And I heard a story that Graham was very clear about that if you didn't want to follow that way of Vierklang, then Vodafone wasn't the right place for you. Yeah. So, it was not all democratic. So basically the big strategy was coming from the top, but then everybody was brought in and brought in to back it up.
That sounds quite different to the numbers-driven corporate experience you were describing in the beginning from where you were coming from in Germany. How did that feel in the first moment of arriving in this different world on a different continent?
Yeah, I mean, I was up for a new culture. That was one of the reasons I wanted to go there. But Australian culture in general is obviously quite different from German culture. But the corporate culture, I thought, was even more different from what I was used to. And in one management meeting, I was asked, so which approach is better, the German one or the Australian one? Obviously, I gave a very diplomatic answer. There would be I thought both were quite extreme, and the answer obviously also was my honest opinion. I thought it was good, would be good if both of them would kind of leave their quite extreme positions for Vodafone Australia to become a bit more number driven, and Germany to be a bit more people focused. And then the guy they brought in after Graham wasn't as extreme on the people side as Graham was, but I think it took a Graham to kind of turn that original culture at Vodafone Australia towards that direction that that they were going. And that's something that Vodafone did quite a few times, that they installed CEOs, and they knew it's only for 1 or 2 years, but they wanted to give that operating company a special spin. Yeah, mm-hmm. And they say, okay, so this place needs to be more people focused, so we bring Graham in, or this people needs to be number focused, so we bring XYZ in. And I was used to more long-term approaches where kind of CEOs would stick around for like 5-10 years rather than coming in to just achieve primarily one goal.
Absolutely makes sense. And now that we're talking about a people focus, I'm sure our listeners are super curious to hear who you are as a person.
Yeah, my name is Sven Gebhardt. I'm 48 years old, happily married for 20 years. I'm a father of two teenage kids who will be leaving schools in the next couple of years. And I like exploring the world and new cultures. So as a teenager, I spent a lot of time in exchange programs internationally. Later on, during my university time, I got my MBA from a university in Vancouver, then went back to Germany to join Vodafone in Düsseldorf, then joined Vodafone Australia. After Australia, went to the global headquarters in Newbury near London, And then after that, joined the German Mittelstand company that I'm steering now.
Well, thank you so much. So how was that going from these big Vodafone like concern, like this global company, to like a brick and mortar business in Germany? And what made you decide to do that?
Firstly, what made me decide to do that? What I like about small and medium enterprises is just the speed that you can make decisions and go a different direction. I very much like the Vodafone experience, but it's obviously like a huge tanker that if you want to change direction, it takes a while to change it, and then you only change by a couple of degrees, whereas a small medium enterprise more like a speedboat that you can change quickly, and if then you realize it was the wrong move, then you can adjust it accordingly, and so that was the reason why I joined the Mittelstand, because I wanted to be more flexible and also to kind of build up my own business. The first time or kind of how was the transition? Actually, it was more of a culture shock than coming from Vodafone Germany to Vodafone Australia, because at least between the Vodafone companies, there were many similarities, right? I mean, even though the culture was different, but there was kind of same industry, same corporate style, many people I knew before. And now coming to the small medium enterprise in Germany was just even a bigger step. People like in Vodafone was mainly young people hungry for a career, hungry to move ahead. And that didn't count for everybody in the smaller business. It was in terms of modern workplace. It was not as up to date as Vodafone obviously was as a startup company or as a new company. So I came here and everything looked a bit aged, and the equipment wasn't up to date, and the furniture and like everything was quite different from what I was used to. And basically, I think after 3 months of being here, one night I went through all the halls and I thought to myself, none of your friends, none of your Vodafone colleagues, and none of your people I met in university, I could get to work here. And because it wasn't attractive enough. And so my mission from that night on was to make GC Heat a company where good people want to come to work, and once they're here, would like to stay. And one of the first things I did was I wrote a long list of 30 items. What do I want my employees to say about my company? And like things like, I don't know, I enjoy being with my colleagues. I get fair appraisal from my supervisor. I know what to do. I know what our strategy is. I get fair payments. And so kind of 30 items. I have everything that I need. I don't work, doesn't harm my health. And then the last question was, I would always recommend GC Heat as a good employer to my friends and family. So that's kind of the question to sum it all up. And those 30 questions that I wrote down then became our questionnaire that we administer like every 3 years roughly to our workforce to see where we're at. And so far, every time we improve over the previous time. And so we do the survey, we evaluate it, we give all the results to our employees and tell them what was good, what was not so good, and what we are going to do to improve the most important things. And two questions are, so kind of it's many closed questions, the 30 I talked about, and there is two open ones. If I was the CEO of GC Heat, I would change those three things immediately. And the other question is, these are three things that I really like at GC Heat. And for me, those two questions are the most interesting ones of the whole questionnaire, because they give me more interesting insights than just kind of rate this sentence from 1 to 6.
Wonderful. That sounds so interesting. Over those years at GC Heat, asking these questions, what was an answer from one of the employees? Like, this is what I would change as a CEO. And how has it impacted you? Like reading it, was there maybe one that stands still out today because it was so special and was so genius in its way?
In the beginning, it was a lot about the environment. So put some paint on the walls and those kind of things. But also the culture with in terms of how employees have been treated or how they've been involved. And changing the kind of investing in furniture and new laptops and putting some paint on the wall, that's quite easy to do. And that's what I did first thing, because that's how you can show that things are changing. A lot more difficult was to change the culture. And for that, that took a couple of years. And my aim was to have people that are more self-reliant and more taking more responsibility rather than being told every day exactly what to do. And so in order to change the culture, also quite a few changes in the management team have happened, because it didn't really fit with what I was used to from Vodafone and how I wanted to have my company run. And so those are two examples. One is very easy to change, kind of all the surroundings. One is very complicated to change the culture. But we've done quite a few things after that to get people involved, to make them understand what's happening, that I can get into later on if you like.
Wonderful. So it sounds like, you know, people were the key factor from what you're saying, right? So we can easily change the furniture and the colors on the wall. What's a bit more time consuming and challenging probably to change is mindset and people's way of going on about their work. So what was your go-to of making that happen?
It was one strategy meeting with all the managers that we had back then, and I told them to close their eyes, and I gave them a picture of how the company will look like in, I don't know what, let's say 5-6 years from now. Yeah. So I described to them how it looks from the outside when a customer arrives. What will he see from the outside? What will be there? What will be different from now? What does he feel when he enters? How would he be greeted? What kind of people would he meet? How does it look like? How fast are we in responses? How good are we in terms of quality? What do we do if there is an issue? And so that was a picture that I had in my head on how I wanted this company to be. And many of those things have happened so far. It's obviously a continuous improvement process, so you're never finished. But we've come a long way since 2008, 2009. And let's say in terms of how does it look like, from Vodafone, I was used to everything was white and red. Here, our company colors are anthracite and orange. So we have quite a few of that in the company now. We do the employee service to know what bothers people and what do they like. We have what we call the happy continuum, which is like a circle with three sections, looks like a Mercedes star, so to say. And it's based on the notion that in the 1990s, all companies were looking for or shareholder value. And then in the 2000 years, everybody knew that customer satisfaction was key if you want to have shareholders happy. And now companies have realized that in order to have customers happy, you need to have engaged and happy employees. And so our happy continuum basically is kind of those three things: happy employees, happy customers, and happy company. And that was then later on also the basis for the vision that we introduced with the Vierklang model. Then we had when we introduced lean management, for example, that was introduced when Carsten, our technical CEO, joined the company, and we wanted to be more efficient, so we introduced lean management. But we wanted people to understand that it's not about firing 20% of the workforce, but kind of increasing our output without increasing our workforce. And so we did workshops with all employees, like everyone in the company, and it was like a little company play game where you learn what's important about processes, where you learn, and everybody had a role, like you with the purchasing guy, the sales guy, the production guy, there was a CEO. And so the teams were mixed and everybody understood what is lean management about, because you had like, I think, five rounds. And after every round, we asked them, so what is, how much stress did you have? How much fun did you have? And how much profit did you make? And obviously, first round, stress high, fun zero, profit minus. Yeah. And then every round, there were improvements, small improvements. And then the last round, fun high, profit high, stress low. And that was the message we wanted to tell them. Hey, it's not about working harder, it's about working smarter. And of course, you never reach 100% of people with that. But if there is some people in the company that you feel and see it, it clicked in their head and they understood what it's about, then that's a great thing. And then there's little smaller things, like personally, I'm a big fan of quotes. And so I started to print a quote every Monday and put it on the whiteboard. And then one time the whiteboard was full. So I asked my IT guys to make it a little newsletter inside. So every Monday I would send out a quote to all my employees. And then later on, we extended it to to some customers as well. And now it's like on our website. So all the quotes from the last, I think it's now since 2016, so quite a few years now. Every week, a new quote are on the website. Every year, we print a book with all the quotes of that year and give it to all the employees and send it to our customers. And so just a little thing as a fresh start into the new week. And yeah, there's many other examples like that. I won't want to go into all the details now that we do just to engage people to get in contact and to make them feel welcome and valued at GC8.
That sounds brilliant. So lots of different things happening in parallel and lots of different areas to tackle. What I'm curious about is, you know, how was it different? You already mentioned earlier that you were working on the Vierklang model, also introducing that to the organization. So how was it different introducing the Vierklang model to a mid-market company compared to the corporate Vodafone back in Australia?
In a place like Vodafone, most employees are in the office, obviously, except for the guys looking after the network. And in a company like ours, most of the employees are in production. And so usually are not as much exposed to strategy development or being in touch with why we do things a certain way or what is the goal of the company. And but I think it's good if they do, yeah, if they understand why it is important that we do things a certain way. Like one part of our purpose is that we actually don't sell a product, but we sell a feeling of security or a feeling of safety, because our products, we produce industrial heating elements, for example, for injection molding machines. And so our products end up being put into large machines, very expensive machines that are then exported to every corner of the world. And if one of our products would fail, it would cost our customers a lot of money and reputation. And so that's why we try to portray the message that people actually don't buy a heater from us. They buy peace of mind, because they know if they put in a GC Heat heater into their machine rather than another one, they don't have to worry that they need to send their service technician to Timbuktu to fix a machine, because the GC Heat heater will last for a very long time. And those things are quite... Not every one of the employees was used that from previous places that they have been to. And also what we do, for example, to strengthen that is that whenever there is a big trade exhibition nearby, like there is, for example, the K show in Düsseldorf, which is a big plastics show, we invite our employees also from production to get on a bus with us and visit that exhibition. And then I talk to a couple of customers before they arrive, and then do a tour with them. And then usually the CEOs or the head of technology of our customers will explain to our employees where our heaters are put into their system and what are their key requirements, so that they have a much better understanding of what they need to do.
Wonderful. Like, from everything that you have said so far, it's so clear that you really care about so much more than just making money. You want to involve your employees and build a great company. What are you most proud of looking at JC Heat?
I honestly think that we have a really fantastic workforce. We are not unionized, which is quite unusual for a company our size and our industry. But I think due to the fact that we have a very open communication with our employees, they know they can approach the HR, head of HR, or the other CEO or me anytime. If there is an issue, we solve it. I think there is a very high level of trust. And that was really important, for example, during COVID times, when we introduced quite a few drastic measures, like separating different production parts, or like we had the company divided up in six distinct areas, and you were not allowed to cross any of the areas, and some other measures. And we usually were 3 weeks ahead of the government in terms of our measures. And so in the beginning, they were a bit questioning why we need to do that, because it seemed a lot. But say, okay, they have thought about it. We trust them. Let's do it. And then a couple of weeks later, they came and said, well, okay, what was the right thing to do? So those things, I think, are difficult to implement if you don't have the trust of your employees. And we have many employees that have been with us for a very long time. 2 months ago, we said farewell to a lady who was here for 42 years, I think. We have many employees that have done their apprenticeship with us. And so the thing I'm most proud of is the workforce we have today.
So it sounds like trust and loyalty are very prominent in the business at GC Heat. What would be the main values you would say you are living in the business?
Well, so the thing with how we got back into the Vierklang model was that in 2020, I thought, even though we had done many, many things to become a better business, I felt we still needed a new, fresh kick. And that's when I contacted Michael, who I knew from Vodafone a couple of years back. And so with him, we did a big session of purpose, vision, value, strategy. I was really amazed on how quickly he managed to condense all the input into very concrete actions and values. And after that workshop, which was run for 2 days, we had some work group afterwards that kind of then distilled everything and kind of refined it a little bit and shaped it and reverted it a little bit, but made it kind of so it fits our company. And the three values that we came up with were partnership, commitment, and flexibility. We've done something similar a couple of years ago, which I talked about the happy continuum. We have another continuum, which is called the partnership continuum. That's something we did a couple of years earlier, because partnership for us is something that we have a very high focus on. We want to have long-term partnerships with our employees, with our suppliers, and then obviously with our customers. And that's why partnership was one of the three things that popped up. Commitment was one, also very important one, because the reason why we did those workshops was we needed to increase our business, we needed to improve our numbers, and that's something we needed committed employees and commitment from the employees. And flexibility is based on the fact that we don't mass produce one heater 10,000 times, but we have customized solutions for our customers who need very individual heaters. And that requires a lot of flexibility, because sometimes a customer needs something very, very quickly and he says, hey guys, I know usually it takes like 6 weeks, but I need this thing in 3 weeks, can you do it? And then we make it possible. Sometimes it's that a customer says, well, I know that usually the surface load would be that, but we need to go higher than that. How can we make it technically possible? So we come up with a solution of making it possible for the customer. And so those are the things that we put a lot of emphasis on. And those are also the things we look for new employees in the hiring process. Because obviously it's important that if we look for new guys, that we then make sure they fit what we need.
Brilliant. And what's the big to-do for you going into the future? So I'm hinting a little bit at strategies here, and also kind of like from a leadership perspective, where do you see kind of like the big pillars you would like to work on going forward?
As I said earlier, it's a continuous process. So it's not a journey with a destination, and when once you're there, everything is fine and it's all done. It's something that we continuously need to work on. And every year or every couple of months, we need to evaluate, are we still on the right track? Yeah, is the mountain we wanted to climb 2 years ago, is that still the mountain? Or is it is the way we took, is it still the right way? Or do we need to make a detour due to different weather conditions or different changes in the industry? Like for example, a couple of years ago, the plastic sector was booming like crazy, and another product line we have, which is kind of big heaters for heating gas and liquids, was a bit slower. And now at the moment, the plastics business is a bit slower, and immersion heaters are booming like crazy, because of decarbonization. Yeah? So one of our product lines makes it possible for companies to equip their big water boilers with electrical heat rather than fossil fuels. And so that's something obviously we need to take into account and change accordingly. So what I like about the Vierklang or the Purpose, Vision, Value strategy is that you have a very clear idea of where you need to go and of the rough goal, and then you break it down into smaller ones and into operational actions. And while still focusing on the big goal, obviously from time to time adjust the smaller one. And I said I'm a big fan of quotes, and one of my favorite one I had on a poster in my university dorm in Canada was from Napoleon Hill, basically along the lines of the world has a way of making room for those who know where they are going. And that's something that I experience a lot of times in my life, that when I know very clearly what I want to do and what I want to achieve, quite a few doors open automatically. And that's how I was able to get to Canada for the degree, that how I was able to get into the talent pool at Vodafone, that how I was able to get into Vodafone Australia, and many examples followed after that. And Vierklang just helps you very nicely to know where you want to go.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sven, for that inspirational stories and insights in your day-to-day work, and then summarizing like Vierklang helps you to know where you want to go. And with that clarity, you can make everything happen. There's even being room created. Thank you so much for your time. I enjoyed our conversation very, very much. And I wish you and GC Heat much of success and the continuous improvement that you've been spoken about.
Well, goodbye. You're welcome. Thanks a lot for having me. And I enjoyed our conversation very much as well. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sven.
That's it for today with Vierklang Strategy Coaching in our Chief of Anything podcast. If you would like to discover the impact of Vierklang Strategy Coaching for your company, then simply click on the link in the description and get in touch with us. Yeah. Yeah.